Welcome to episode 155 of Girl Take the Lead, where each week we explore womanhood and leadership. And I'm your host, Yo Kenny. Amber Ontiveros, Gen X, joins us to discuss her book, Heal the Four Woundings, A Guide to End Discord and Discrimination. After a life-altering near-death experience, Amber recognized the limitations of traditional racial equity conversations and was inspired to innovate. She is an unconscious bias coach and has crafted tools grounded in the neuroscience of unconscious bias to heal herself from beliefs that result in discord, discrimination, and oppression. Amber is also a longtime civil rights activist and served in advisory roles in the U.S. Department of Transportation for both the Bush and Obama administrations, and now runs Ontiveros Associates, specializing in change management, policy development, executive and spiritual coaching. She has an amazing story to tell, especially about the light and love she lives in today, and helps her clients listen mindfully and awaken grace. Part of her story, though, includes being raped, so around 9 minutes 30 seconds, you might want to skip those few seconds if that topic is a trigger for you. Enjoy the listen. Here you go. Amber. Oh, my friend, I really feel like a closeness to you. I feel like we're sisters.
Me too.
And I'm so glad you're here. And going to share your story with everybody. And maybe let's start by just you introducing yourself to the listeners and telling them a little bit about your background, because it is friggin' amazing.
Yeah. So let's see where to start. Obviously, I'm Amber. I'm Latina. I was born in Arizona, in Phoenix. I grew up poor on a farm in Arizona. I was very blessed. Very blessed. And I grew up poor, and I was lucky in that I worked really hard, and I kind of followed my passion. And I accidentally ended up here in Portland, Oregon, and I met a Black woman who was a senator, and you know, everything is not accidental. And she saw something in me that I didn't see in me. And I know that it was my mother who had passed, who had put her in my life. And so I ended up working for a Black senator for many years. I became a lobbyist, and then I ended up working for the head of TriMet, which is a transit agency here in Portland. And ultimately, I was recruited to work for the Bush administration and the Obama administration. And I'm an expert in several federal civil rights laws that I wrote. And I've investigated agencies for discrimination and compliance with the federal law that I wrote all across the country for many years. And so the thing that we're going to talk about, which is the discrimination and oppression that lives within me, is not, does not go unnoticed about the irony and the hilarity for which the infinite creator has.
Yeah, I get that. I think our listeners will get that too. What about the book? Would you tell them a little bit about the book?
Yeah, so I left the Obama administration in 2014. They kicked my butt because we did everything. And then, you know, I started my business and, you know, was helping agencies implement some of the things that I had learned all over the country. You know, I learned about what not to do, and through learning what not to do, I could help agencies figure out what to do. But, you know, I have a rare disease, and I talk about this in the book, that one day I was in my bed And the next minute, Yolanda, I was floating through the ceiling. And I was floating through this ceiling and I was in pure blackness and I can feel it. I can feel it right now. And that pure blackness felt so good. And 1 minute I was there and the next minute there was like a tiny pinprick of light on the other side of what was like infinity. And it called me. It called me. And it sucked me into it like a vacuum. And the next minute I was in an expansion of light. And the reason why I call the being of light that was there, the infinite creator, is because it was infinite expansion of light.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew there was nothing beyond its creation. And it's very hard to explain and try and process and describe, but it felt like, one, it was a being of light.
Mm-hmm.
And I remembered everything, because when you're not in the body, you are everything, because you're a spark of that, which is you're a spark of the consciousness of God. That's who we really are. That is what lives within us, is a spark of the consciousness of God. And so in that moment, I remembered everything, because I am everything and so are you. And so you both remember everything and you feel what you really are, which is you are the harmonic of love. It had a harmonic. I could talk for hours about that. Even though it only was minutes, it felt like an eternity.
Yeah.
And I went through essentially a life review of every experience I had ever had. It came back into my essence. And I felt all of the good things that I had done in my lifetime and all of the ways that I had hurt people. And I experienced it from a higher perspective, from that perspective of the infinite creator. And so when I came back, it shocked me. It cracked my consciousness. It woke me up. I realized I had to die so that I could live. And that I was not seeing what was real. I was not seeing what was real. And so I became completely overnight obsessed with consciousness and quantum mechanics and the neuroscience of unconscious bias and these really bizarre things. And somehow I knew all of these things about quantum mechanics and consciousness and unconscious bias, because when you go over there, you are a part of it and it somehow encodes into you. And why did I write this book? I wrote this book because the infinite creator helped me see. Oh no, baby. You are angry with the white man who is angry over Black Lives Matter. But those very oppressive thoughts live within you.
Right. Clarity on these things, right? I mean, it just sounds like you got completely clear to see your side of things too.
It lives within me, yes. And so as a result of that and studying these things, I realized that darkness lived within me. And if I'm really going to be a change management expert and going to be a leader in discrimination and going to be a woman, a person of color and a bi woman, and if I'm really going to be a leader in these things, I have to stand up and announce to the world, how do you actually change it? And the infinite creator gave me the tools to change myself. And the book both identifies the problem and the solution that lives within me and that lives within you, because Like I said, I am a policy advisor. We identify the problem and the potential solutions regardless of where it takes us.
Yeah.
And in this case, the reason why we act the way that we do, and we are oppressive, or we're triggered, or we're jealous, or whatever, it's all the same thing. So I ended up calling the book The Four Woundings, because what's really happening is the brain is holding you hostage to only allowing you to experience through your sense perceptions what you believe about yourself.
Right, right.
And so there's this part of the brain called the reticular activation system. And whatever you believe about yourself, if you think you're awesome, in my case, I suck because I had been raped. I had gone through a lot of trauma. I had been discriminated against a lot. All of those things color yourself and create traumas and woundings that, unless you have healed from them, your brain automatically applies those filters to new experiences, because it's quickly categorizing experiences, because it's like it's thinking, oh, that's a lion. I need to quickly analyze that experience so that I don't get eaten by the lion.
Right.
So it's doing that constantly and applying your filters, which are your expectations, namely experiences that affirm my bias. And
right.
So the four woundings are: I am not enough. I am not enough is the belief that I have to compare myself to you, my beautiful white sisters that are listening. And because I believe that, and I believe the white aesthetic that I no longer do now, I believe that I'm not worthy because you are the standard of beauty.
Yeah.
And because we've been told what we've been told, I then think I have to compete with you, the beautiful white woman, and that in order for me to compete with you, I have to win. Which means I'm going to deny you a resource, or I'm going to do something ugly to oppress you, because in the past I had somehow been denied a resource. So that's how it's playing out. Those are the four woundings.
Yeah.
I am not worthy. I am not enough. I have to win, and I don't have enough. Those are the four woundings. And they play out in work, in oppression. They play out in discrimination. They play out with girlfriends. They play out with partners.
Yeah, definitely. I can see that when there's a trauma that's happened, how we can go to that neural pathway that's so, you know, just trying to protect us, and how these things can. And it's, I had a beautiful weekend with some friends, some college friends. And when there's no comparison and when there's no competition and there's only love for each other, oh my God. Is that just not the deepest connection you could have with somebody?
It is.
It just fills you up. I think the book lays out so many wonderful things from the neuroscience point of view, and then showing us how we see the world differently, each of us. So that discrimination and the discord comes from us seeing the world differently.
That's right.
And then maybe talk a little bit too about the different biases, because you spend some time talking about the ones that are self-serving and also those that are unconscious. And I think, you know, it's all because that's happening in our brain, right?
Mm-hmm.
like you were saying before. So how are they different?
Well, okay, so there are so many, the neuroscience has studied all these different types of biases, right? There's, you know, bias against women, et cetera. But when I read all these different biases, the reason why I included two, but I'll really talk about the two in the book and then the third. So the two in the book that I talk about is, one is called the self-serving bias. And I'm going to talk about these three because all of the rest of them really boil down to these three. So the self-serving bias is a self-esteem protective mechanism. It's an evolutionary mechanism. So the way it works is, if good things happen to me, I attribute it to myself.
Of course.
If bad things happen to me, I attribute it to things outside of myself. So I apply for a job. I try and get the job. I don't get the job. I don't get the job because I blame it on all these other factors. And it helps me with the challenge to get the job so that I can eat.
Mm.
That's why it's important. The mini-me bias, which is also a bias, it's, you basically pick people that are like you in hiring. Now, why is that also evolutionary? Because back in the caveman days, if the other tribes weren't like us, they would likely steal our food and our women and our children. So we would pick tribe. We wouldn't let other tribes be in our tribe unless they looked like us or were mm-hmm, like us. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. Again, it's evolutionary. Now, this third bias, your brain has a negative bias. So in the book, and everyone that knows me knows, I only talk about positive things. And there are two reasons why. Well, actually three. One is because your brain has a negative bias. If you see five things, it will look at all those five things negatively. It's biased to the negative, always. Okay, now, but if you know that and you understand what the reticular activation system is doing, you have to, when you have a negative experience, you have to reframe that experience always in the positive, even if it was negative, because you're retraining your RAS filter to then only see positive things, because then it will change the way the brain see and experience things to only experience positive things. And I want to have my life awesome.
Right. Right.
And the other reason why I do that, and this is probably for me the most important, which is, from that near-death experience, I was shown that the kingdom of heaven that is within you is the consciousness of the infinite creator, in which case all that power that you have is within you, in which case you want to have positive power come back to you, not negative one.
Love that. In the book, you talk, you have some wonderful passages, and one of my favorite was Dr. King's. And I'm just going to say it. I'm just going to read it real quick. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. I think that was just like what you were talking about right there.
Yeah, it is. It is the key, because when you really start practicing this, Yolanda, the darkness that is within me is the same darkness that is within the white man that is angry over Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. And then once you fill that darkness up with love. You only have compassion for the man that is angry and jealous over me. And then you realize you can't combat darkness with darkness, because then you're only feeding it. The only way that we can combat darkness is with light. If you think of it this way, if this pen was a flashlight and this is the ground, it's not like darkness can shine on a light and it removes the light. It doesn't work that way. That is the power of love. Love and light are a metaphor for the same thing.
Let's let that sink in for a second, because I think that's so powerful.
And I mean, and I guess I'll say one other thing, Yolanda, and this will be deep. The beings of light explained to me this. Darkness is simply the absence of light. It's simply the absence of love. When in the face of the absence of love, you give it more love. Because it doesn't have any. And so I know people, I need people are confused by me when I say I only have compassion for the racist, and they're shocked by me. And I'm not saying I accept it. I'm not saying that I completely, that I accept the racist. That is not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, how am I going to show up when it is in front of me? Yeah. And when it shows up, I am going to love the racist, because that's what they need.
Oh, and that's what's going to heal us.
Exactly.
Maybe we can talk a little bit more about the wounds. Because I think we almost have them. I know that
I'll have them.
No one gets through life without trauma.
Yes.
So I know for me, belonging and fitting in and assimilating and all came with the feeling of not being worthy.
Yep.
And, you know, knowing that I was different and that the last name was Chavez and it wasn't like everybody else's. And my family didn't look like anybody else's.
Right.
It's just, so how can others maybe find those wounds? Like how did you come to that? How did you come to those four? And for yourself, and say, this is what I think this is about.
So the way that I came to them is, the beings of light had given me a tool called mindful listening. And mindful listening is a tool that I use with myself, and I teach my clients how to use it. And so imagine you're in a situation where is very traumatizing. You're really triggered. So what you do is you focus on the tip of your nose, and as you breathe in, think in, and as you breathe out, think out. And this helps you regulate your emotions. It helps you compose yourself so that you can assess the situation. Because if you're triggered, likely you're not going to be able to analyze the situation accurately. So you compose yourself, and then the other thing you're doing is you're asking yourself these questions. You asked yourself, why am I getting angry? Why am I feeling the way that I'm feeling? And then what kind of beliefs would I have if I was angry? And then the other two questions are, you ask questions about the person that's behaving in whatever way that they're behaving. Why would they behave that way? And what kind of beliefs would a person like that have to behave that way? Now, why you're asking yourself these questions is because you're trying to understand you. In other words, what are the core beliefs that are resulting in you having an emotional response?
Right.
And you're also trying to understand the other person about why are they behaving in the way that they are behaving. And and that will help you understand their core beliefs that are resulting in their behavior. Because again, for the listener, your beliefs in your unconscious mind that you don't know exist create your thoughts, that create your emotions, that create your behavior. And if you've ever had a behavior, you have no idea where it came from. It's in your brain somewhere with some kind of belief.
I love that. Well, the whole work around beliefs, it's work, you know, it's like work. You're saying you got to work through and see what's at that core.
Yes.
And I love that you bring that up, because that to me is also the heart of things, those beliefs. And you can shake those up though, because you can question them and you can say, well, is that really true? Or do I still need that anymore? Like
that's
maybe,
right.
Right? Maybe I had that as, you know, a 5-year-old and that was really important for survival, but I don't need it now and I can let it go.
Yes.
But it just doesn't happen. I think what you're showing us is that you have tools, you can work with them, you can find people who can help you identify these things, and you can get to the core so that you can heal those wounds. Because if we're all walking around being wounded, like we are right now,
we are, yes.
You know, we need leaders like you to help us say, hey, this isn't the way. This is the way to, we've got to look at this, has come from love.
That's right.
Compassion. For ourselves first. I think we have to do that work on ourselves first.
Yes.
So we can give it to other people.
Yes.
I think another tool that you talked about in your book was awakening grace.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Because that was very cool.
So in the near-death experience, the beings of light gave me a tool that I didn't know what it was. It was, they called it awakening grace. And awakening grace, awakening stands for to turn, to go within, to witness and see false, dark, self-loathing, oppressive beliefs. It's basically turning within to see yourself. That's the awakened part. Grace is then extending kindness, love, and compassion and grace. So in other words, awakening, turning within to see yourself, and grace to extend compassion, loving kindness. And through awakening your grace, you then do what Yolanda just said, which is you can then extend the hand of love to another. Once you awaken your grace, you can then extend the hand of love to another. So the awakening grace tools that I now use with other executives are so many, like mindful listening. I do an exercise called breaking the habit of being small. And that ties with the visualization exercise, because this is all based on neuroplasticity. So your brain doesn't understand the difference between an imaginary versus a real experience. So when you do these visualization experiences and techniques that I use at right before you go to bed, it locks that in and it builds your confidence because your brain doesn't understand the difference between a fake and a real one. So awakening grace is all about turning within to see the quote darkness that is simply the absence of light and love. And so you find those things and you compassionately love those parts of yourself, and then you can become the best version of whoever you want to be.
Yeah. We did a episode about a book called No Bad Parts. And I just really loved the idea that we can be all of these things. We can be our experiences and we can embrace all of them. And I used to think, well, I need to get rid of that one so that I could be this better person. But maybe it's more about the awakening part of accepting.
Yes.
That's me. And that was there for a reason.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. And the way I would say, and I'm going to say this because this is the way the Creator talks to me. I would say this to you, my sister, Yolanda. You were always perfect. You just were programmed to believe that you weren't. And those things that were, quote, your imperfections or your darkness, you had to experience to be the Yolanda that you are today.
Okay, another episode where the tears are coming because you've touched my heart so deeply.
That's how he speaks. That is the real thing. He's talking to me right now.
So cool. Okay, another episode where this little girl is like, oh my God, we're crying again.
Beautiful.
Oh, but I think, how can that not be so beautiful? I mean, that is just so beautiful and it's so touching. And, you know, to have that light and that love come in, you know, it's almost like a beam that just goes right to the hurt.
Yes.
You know, and just goes boom. You know, it's like we're gonna flip that. Well, you know, we've covered our questions that we had outlined when we talked before. Is there anything else that you would like to pass along? I mean, you've given us love and understanding and compassion. And is there anything left? I mean, you did such a great job.
Let's see. I don't know. What else do you think I should talk about, Yolanda?
I think my takeaway, because you talk a lot about this in the book, is self-love.
Yeah. Okay, I'll talk about that. So, we have it wrong. We have it wrong, Yolanda. We first must love ourselves. We must love ourselves first. Because when you go back to what I said at the beginning, for those of you that can see, I have my hand up, and in the middle, think of your heart. Think of your heart as the spark of consciousness within you. You have to love yourself unconditionally. Love yourself. And when you then love yourself in the way that you are loved, that comes to you because that is what's within you that you are calling forth. Do you get it?
Mm-hmm.
It's manifestation. So if you are consciousness, if there is a consciousness within you that is that powerful, and you do not love you. That is what you are calling forth. So you have to love you, including when you make a mistake. When you make a mistake, it is, here's why this is also a love story. It's a love story because when you made a mistake, you were unconscious. You were unconscious.
Yeah.
You made the mistake from your past. It wasn't real. You were innocent. That's what I learned in my NDE. And I realized that I was like, oh my gosh, but I'd hurt all these people. And so therefore I had to come back so that I could learn all these things, so that I could teach people, we don't have to live this way. And also, you can't live this way because you're a spark of God.
Cool.
It's not who you really are.
You are amazing. You are so amazing. And your book is so amazing.
I hope it helps people.
I want everyone to listen to this episode. Everyone needs to listen to it. But, oh my gosh. Thank you.
Thank you, Yolanda. And I just want to say one last thing to everybody that's listening. You don't understand the true nature and true power that's within you. But when you're ready and you're ready to tap into it and you then harness it, you can literally be anything that you want. That's real.
Yeah. Thank you again. I love you. Take care of yourself. You're so special. Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening today, and we sure hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please leave us a comment wherever you listen to your podcasts. Tell a friend about us. Join our public Facebook group, Girl Take the Lead, or visit our website, girltaketheleadpod.com. We also have a YouTube channel where your subscription would be appreciated. Once you're on YouTube, search at Girl Take the Lead. And we've recently expanded to YouTube Music, where you can find a video of this episode. Here are the three takeaways from this episode. One, everything is not accidental. Two, the only way to combat darkness is with light. And three, the secret is self-love. You can't give what you don't have. Our next episode will explore a bit more about the spiritual awakenings after a near-death experience. I had questions after listening to Amber's story that got me going. And maybe you too. Like, how common are near-death experiences? And are other experiences like Amber's? So I found a study that Dr. Bruce Grayson, who has been studying the field since the mid-1970s as professor of psychiatry and director of the Division of Perceptual Studies at the University of Virginia Health System. And he's credited with the term near-death experience. And then I found his book titled After. A doctor explores what near-death experiences reveal about life and beyond. I was in, and hope you will be too. So join us again. Thanks for being here, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye.